This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. I trust and hope that you are doing well. If you want to give us a call, the numbers are 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316, 325-4316, or 325-4259. That's 325-4259. You can call us from the Family Islands on 242-300-5720. You can text us on 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. We are live on Cable Bahamas, channel 969. That's the way my mother listens to the show. You can catch us on BTC Flow channel 612. That's BTC Flow channel 612. A couple of things today. Somebody sent me the Prime Minister's Christmas message from one of the affordable homes built by the government. I thought it was very nicely done, very visually appealing. Prime Minister's message was warm and on point. In terms of the greetings he was providing, et cetera. Very, very nice. Very nice lead done in the setting that he chose. I think that, and I have argued this before, that prime ministers of the Bahamas have not used their platform nearly enough to soft message the country. See, we don't just lead people programmatically. We don't just lead people projectly. We don't just lead people policy-wise. You know, when you lead people. And people have hopes and dreams, they have fears and anxieties, they have sorrows and joys, and they want to believe and would and appreciate when their leadership connects with them at the heart level. Yes, at the head level, more importantly at the head level, I say, because reason is more important than emotions, but emotions matter and count too. And so the extent to which you can connect with people's hopes, their dreams, their aspirations, their anxieties, their fears, their discouragement, is the extent to which they can lean into you and believe that you can help them get where it is they want to go. And so Prime Minister Davis has done a bit more of that than others may have, a bit more. I can't say extraordinarily more. And he certainly has the temperament, he has the temperament to do such a thing. And You know, so Lyndon in those earlier days really was inspiring the whole nation because he was pioneering us through a transition from our colonial lords to a new day. And so he, lots of his messages were quite inspirational and encouraging in those earliest of days. And even in it, he continued, Sir Lyndon, to really try to speak to the aspirations of Bahamians to be a dignified people above and beyond the circumstances that they had come out of. And so when you have an opportunity to speak to the soft ambitions of a people, then, you know, that's a good thing for leaders to do. So kudos to the Prime Minister for such a heartwarming Christmas message and the context. So I was reading the newspaper and I came across the PM's comments to the United Nations. He was saying that I don't need the United Nations to tell me what is going on. He was saying, listen, I know we are aware of these things. These deficiencies that the United Nations may be highlighting, but the Prime Minister says we have resources that have to be spread across many, many things. And so, you know, we have choices to make. And so we wait for your final report, but we'll get to things, but you know, we have many things to deal with. Fair enough that we definitely always have many things to spend our resources on. But then the Prime Minister went on to say something that I actually thought was remarkable. Remarkable. I would hope, let me put it that way, that the Prime Minister may wish to reword this or clarify it, because for me, it is an extraordinary statement. Now, if you are a fan of the Prime Minister, if you are a fan of the Progressive Liberal Party and what have you, you have every right to get mad at me if you wish. I can't do anything about your emotions and your feelings. If you're an FNM and you may find what I say likable, etc., I don't have any interest in that either. And I can't do anything about your feelings or emotions. I am speaking to this because it struck me. It really did. It struck me as quite remarkable. So according to a story in the Nassau Guardian, in which it was speaking to the Prime Minister's comments about the United Nations, the story was written by Aisha Small. And in the story, the Prime Minister is quoted. Let me make sure. So actually the minister may have said this, so maybe the Prime Minister may want to fix it. So let me read the story for you, because it's a little, says Davis said he understands the position of the UN. Says the UN has to appreciate that we are a country of limited resources, Davis said. So I'm going to read it just how it reads. So the story says, we have a lot of competing interests to attract our attention from resources. So we are doing what we can within the remit of our resources. So we hear them and we understand that they ask what they are saying, but we also have other responsibilities to discharge, and that requires resources. And we have to be able to share those resources across the spectrum where the need is most crucial and urgent. Last week, Minister of National Security, Wayne Monroe, did not mince words when asked to respond to the working group. He says, we are looking at it. He said of the report, we await. Okay, so this is the Minister of National Security. So it's not the Prime Minister. It's the Minister of National Security. But this is carried in the story where the Prime Minister is commenting on the matter, right? And this is what the Minister of National Security said. We await the final report, but the one thing I would advise the public against, if you have to choose who you believe, you do yourself a disservice if you choose to believe an adverse report against the very persons who you will call when somebody is at your door, who you will call when you hear gunshots in the night, who you will call when you feel threatened. Okay, this is what the Minister of National Security is saying. So it is, I would tell you that that's a remarkable statement from the Minister of National Security and from the government of the Bahamas, because unless the government of the Bahamas fix this, then it must be believed that it is the government's position. The minister is a member of the cabinet of the Bahamas, and he spoke. He wasn't corrected by the cabinet. He wasn't corrected by the prime minister. He's the prime minister's minister. And he said these words. So you say, Shivago, what's wrong with those words? Let me tell you what's wrong. If it's not obvious to you. So let's suppose, let me back up. The police, the defense force, the immigration officers of this country, the prison officers and other uniform branches of the government are invaluable entities in our governance. Invaluable. Okay? We need them. We require them for the maintenance of good order and lawfulness in the country. For the most part, we have been blessed by them in the conduct of their duties, blessed by their professionalism and their commitment to their job. Right? We see it every day. We feel it every day. We experience it every day, what they do. Okay? Now, and theirs is an extraordinary job, but it is a job. It's a job for which they signed up. It is a job for which they are paid and honored. In some instances, it is their job. So I want you to imagine that a group of people produces an adverse report about the police or the defense force or about immigration in respect of their behavior, conduct, something negative. Maybe it's a civilian group, maybe it's a committee. And you haven't received the report. You believe the report. You say, wow, given the evidence presented, this is really something. And this is troubling about our police or defense force or some other force. And the police or the defense force or the immigration, they are all aware that you are aware of the report and you verily believe the report. Right? Seldom is the report ever about the entire force. It may reflect poorly on the force, but it generally oftentimes about components or people or some people in the force, but it's seldom about the whole force that we get these negative reports, right? Even the commission on those will acknowledge that sometimes they are bad apples. Sometimes they have poor officers who perform poorly, and they all admit that. But you receive the report, I receive the report, and verily believe the report. And the police, let's use the police as an example. The police knows that you believe the report. Maybe you went on the radio, maybe you wrote an editorial, a letter to the editor, and you believe the report. And then something happens at your home. If I am to believe what the Minister of National Security says, he is suggesting that my belief in respect of a report adverse to the police put me at some risk, at some disservice by the police, because I have to now call upon them because notwithstanding, I believe something reported adverse about them. Seriously? I believe that most police officers themselves will tell you, I have to put my personal feelings aside. I have to put my personal beliefs aside. I have to put my hurt and this aside and do the job that I have been called to do. And knowing that you believe a report adverse about me, I will catch the thief. I will catch the person who is attempting to harm you. I will do my job. That statement, I cannot understand. I do not understand it. I cannot understand it. Maybe somebody can help me understand it. I would advise the public against, if you have to choose who you believe. You do yourself a disservice if you choose to believe an adverse report against the very persons you will call when somebody is at your door. Wait a minute now. This is the United Nations, you know. This is the United Nations. It's the same United Nations the Bahamas went to ask it to intervene in the affairs of the small countries that are being adversely listed by the OECD in those. Same United Nations. Same United Nations that we appeal to for climate action. Same United Nations. And we are being told, listen, man, that's the police. That's the defense force. That's immigration. If you got to choose now who you believe, seriously? Okay. So let me explain something to yourselves that I hope will help. It's a teachable moment. Hope will help. So when you come back from the break, I'll lay it down for you. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabara Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand. Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather.
Spice up your taste buds this season with the new Jalapeno Rodeo Burger at Burger King Nassau. Each bite of the Jalapeno Rodeo features a classic flame-grilled beef patty, pepper jack cheese, crunchy fried onions, and a spicy jalapeno kick, topped with barbecue and chipotle sauce served on a soft potato bun. The Jalapeno Rodeo Burger is even tastier in a combo with our new half-seas, half onion rings, and half french fries with a drink. Or cool it down with the new and delicious creamy floats collection at Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
Secure your financial future with RF Bank and Trust. Explore the RF Secured Balance Fund, designed for long-term financial security. This diversified fund offers both growth potential and a steady income source. Plan for the long term with a recommended minimum investment of 5 years. With over 2 decades of experience, RF Bank and Trust is your expert in preserving and growing wealth. We're your local private bank, connecting you with the best local and international investment opportunities. Don't miss the chance to secure your financial future with RF Bank and Trust.
Happy holidays from Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. Have a beautiful and wonderful Christmas.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. I'm so glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. If you want to call, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can call us from the Family Islands on 242-300-5720. You can text us on 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. I think that every single law-abiding citizen, and I would dare say even non-law-abiding citizens, have a relatively healthy fear of the authorities. We must. We are fearful because they are the enforcers of the laws. And so if we violate the laws, then we can come into contact with them, and it's not something we would want to happen. So we have a healthy fear of them. But an intimidating fear of the authorities is not good for a free society. It's not good for a democracy. And so we ought not ever to have an intimidation. We ought never to have to choose between the truth that we believe and the authorities. We simply have to be able to weigh the evidence of the information that's presented to us and be able to say, I don't believe that information about my police force, my defense force, my immigration force, my prison officers. I believe it based on the evidence, and there should be no repercussions to a citizen or the citizenry as a result thereof. None whatsoever. None. Ever. Let me tell you why. So, all the commonwealth of the commonwealth belongs to the people. Not to me, Shivago Lang, individually as a member of the people, but to me and all the other people that make up the people, we collectively own all the commonwealth. And because we cannot govern ourselves in mob fashion, we can't. It's not practical for us as a collective to do so. We have chosen in our governing orientation to provide certain powers from ourselves. This is our power, because if we wanted to, we could use the power as mob power, right? We could try to govern ourselves by mob power. And we could say, because we outnumber everybody, we outnumber the cabinet, we outnumber the parliament, we outnumber the judiciary, we outnumber all the police force, defense force. We may not outgunned them, but we outnumber them. And we could conceivably in mass create the kind of chaos that could overcome them all. And the struggle for that overcoming could only end in many, many lives lost, many, many injured souls, and a destroyed society. So we don't want that. We never try that. We never would like that to prevail in the country. We saw a semblance of that on January 6th in the United States of America. We saw a glimpse of what that could look like. We have seen what it looks like in other societies for sure. But in a democracy like America, there was a glimpse of it on January 6th, some years ago. So what we do is we take some of this power. Well, first of all, we take the commonwealth of the commonwealth, and we set up a trust. Now, I don't know if you understand what a trust is, but this is what a trust is. So wealthy people from outside the country, fearful that their wealth might be at risk of adverse lawsuits or political action or these kinds of things, threats to themselves, think, how might I protect this wealth of mine from such things? Well, here's how the argument goes. If I don't own something, you can't sue me for it. If I don't own something, you can't take it from me. But the question is, how do I not own something, but still benefit from the something that I don't own because I don't technically own it? How could I do that? Is there a way that I could not own something and have the something managed in a way that I still benefit from it, or my family benefits from it, or my inheritors benefit from it? Is there a way? Well, jurisdictions like the Bahamas have found a way. What is that way? In law, in the Bahamas, in law, it is possible for you, for such a person, to transfer their legal ownership of something to someone else. So me, or the person who transfers that asset to someone else to legally own, I am called the settlor. That's what they call me, the settlor. And the person to whom I transfer those assets, it could be $1 billion, it could be $1 trillion, it could be a land, it could be a homes, it could be business shares, it could be whatever. That person is called the trustee. Me, the settlor, transfers the legal ownership of my wealth, my asset, to the trustee. And the trustee manages that asset on the basis of a trust agreement set up and signed between us. The agreement says you now legally own this asset. So don't come, you can sue me if you wish. I don't have nothing. I don't own nothing because the ownership has been transferred. Right? But the trustee who now owns it, that trustee could be an individual, that trustee could be a company, an institution, it doesn't matter, can only operate with respect to that asset on the basis of the arrangement, that agreement that we sign. And generally that agreement says the beneficiary of the returns of that asset, the eventual disposition of that asset is going to be either me or likely some benefactor of mine, and you get a fee for managing it. So now we solve the problem. We solve the problem of I no longer own it, but it benefits me to the extent that it is going to be used by the new legal owner in a way that benefits me. That's called a trust. And in this country, multiple billions of dollars are managed by entities in the Bahamas under such arrangements called trusts. So the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, our Commonwealth, is an asset that collectively belongs to the people of the Bahamas. It has been entrusted to the government of the Bahamas. Entrusted to. Under a social contract, maybe not as explicitly outlined as a trust deed or trust agreement, but under a social contract, most primarily backed by the Constitution, that says that those assets are to be used exclusively for the benefit of the Bahamian society as a common unity. So those assets, that trust that you extended, includes all the power of the prime minister, all the power of the cabinet, all the power of the parliament, all the power of the judiciary, all the power of the people who draw a paycheck from the treasury of the Bahamas. They all are trustees of a power you gave. And it is a breach of that trust, a severe violation of that trust, for them to use that power against you, against your interests, and not you personally, because if you go and break the law, they can use that power against you. But what they can't do is use that power even against you in a way that offends the collective foundations of the rights that we have in under the Constitution. So what am I saying? A police officer, a defense force officer, a judge, a prime minister, a cabinet minister, an immigration officer, all of them, all, every single one, no matter how personally offended they may be by a belief you have as a society, no matter how personally frustrated they may be, no matter how put off by things you say or do or believe they may be, the power that they have in their official capacity is a delegated power that can only be used in your interest. And if your belief in a report adverse to themselves could lead to them not pursuing a criminal, not doing something when you complain to them, then that is a breach of trust. Most such people, I believe, would not dare to enter that arena. And therefore, why a minister of national security would even venture such a thought is challenging to understand. They operate on trust. If you draw a check from the public purse, you operate on a position of trust. It's the reality of it. Inasmuch as you would like to act in some other way, you are duty bound by virtue of your engagement, your appointment, to operate on the basis of that social contract, that trust, that says the power that you exercise can only be exercised to the benefit of the society. How does it benefit a society if you believe in having known a person or set of persons in the society, believe a report adverse against you, you're not going to respond to their complaint or their inquiry or their call? How does that aid the society? If someone could tell me, I'd be happy to yield. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabago Lang, your host. We'll be back after this.
The lady run into me, marsh the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull out the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
Ciao. Fidelity Can On this year with their new festive giveaway. You could win cash, an iPhone 15, get a bill paid off, PS5, all kind of things. Apply for a loan or an ASUS savings account, and you could win. Try our call them now, yeah? 356-7764.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
This is Erin Green, wishing you and your family happiness, peace, and mangoes this holiday season and throughout the new year from Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM.
Ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live, I'm Shabab Olain, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. If you want to give us a call, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 242-300-5720. Sorry, you can call us from the Family Islands on 242-300-5720. You can text us on 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. Listen to me. I believe that Wayne Monroe, the Minister of National Security, is an exceptionally intelligent gentleman. I really do. I told you all before, I heard him give a national security policy presentation at the Government of Public Policy Institute, and it was by none the best policy presentation I had heard. I had heard that Dr. Dwayne Sands had given one. He gave an excellent one too. So there were two excellent ones, but the way in which and the way Mr. Monroe structured his comments and his presentation was really something to behold. You know, microphones are not always friendly to political directors. They are not. I happen to believe, I really do, and I have said this before, and I will say it again. It happened in the Minister administration, and it is happening now. I think that far too many weighty policy matters are subjected to flippant, casual, ad hoc press statements by ministers. There are some matters where a minister should go back, give collective consideration to it in his or her ministry, and then by his in his and her in the cabinet, and then provide a communication to the parliament where the disciplines of your, the review of your technocrats, your administrative advisors and the like have been called to bear on your statement. And that way you get, people get to check and say, you know what? I don't think you should say that. Or you know what? You may need to add this and so forth. But far too often these microphones come to your face and you say stuff. And maybe even in the moment you say it on reflection, you would say, you know what, I would have said that differently. I would have said that differently. But the fact of the matter is you said it. And so I think that this statement, first of all, let me say, right? it's quite possible. That the minister might say, listen, man, I say what I mean what I say. I accept that. I accept that that is possible. I do not accept it as a good policy statement. I do not. I think the public of the Bahamas should receive a better statement than that. I think that statement should be. I do. We have a call on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Mr. Lang, how are you, sir?
Hey, I'm right here, man. Yourself?
Good, man. Good. You're talking about power. I would like to share something with you as an electronic circuit designer. What we try to do when we design a circuit is to make sure that what we put into the microphone matches the impedance that we get out. And we want real power. But what we seem to be doing is when you get reactive power, like when you have a mic sitting in front of a speaker and you hear that hissing sound, you have the oscillation, that's reactive power. When you pour a carbonated beverage, you see the fizz on top, that's reactive power, but the beverage underneath is real power. What we are not tapping into, sorry?
No, I said okay.
Okay, so what we are not tapping into is the real potential power of our citizenry. We are really only looking at the reactive power, the fizz. Mm-hmm. And until we could really see how we can harness real power in our teaching, in our school, instead of reactive power, ain't nothing much can change. Because that's really what we seem to be doing. Our circuitry is just reactive power. We are not really getting the real power of our, we're not using the real benefits of our country, the human resource, the resources we have, all the natural. That seems to be going, I don't know where, but maybe we're getting it and it's going somewhere. But we need to focus on getting the real power of the people in our country instead of just feeding them when election time comes around some reactive power experience. That's my take on it.
Okay, bro. I appreciate it. Thanks for calling. Okay. This text says, Mr. Lang, I listened attentively to the minister's defense of the system under his remit and thought that he was going way overboard. If anyone should know the issues in the system, it would be him. While the report may not have gotten everything right, we all know it wasn't all wrong. Some of the issues we hear, those caught up in the system complain about constantly. To dismiss the report outright shows that we cannot expect any improvement in the system. To be quite honest, I see this administration as lacking in an effort to tackle the issues of crime, and they are lashing out at all criticism. While I too believe Monroe is brilliant, the art of politics eludes him, says this texter. Mind you, even the prime minister acknowledged that, you know, they were aware of some of these issues. That's what the prime minister said. The prime minister said, the prime minister didn't say the report was not to be believed. Prime Minister said, he said, and I quote, I'm concerned about it. This is what the Prime Minister says. I didn't need the UN report to tell me about some of these issues we have. And we are addressing them. I mean, like as a statement, that's it. That's it. UN, what you are concerned about, I'm concerned about too. Right? And we are addressing it. Okay? You could follow that up with, so let me take this issue to the UN address. We're dealing with that. Here's the other issue we're dealing with. Here's what we're doing. So forth, so forth. But you would get that in a communication, because in the communication, it would be more thoughtful, more considered, more detailed, right? So the Prime Minister's right on point. Right? And then he goes on to say, listen, maybe what is happening is we're under some restraint, you know, constraints, because resources have to go toward these things. If you're going to, you know, the other day, the Minister of Immigration indicated that they were going to be putting a legislation together to deal with the detention center. That's a thing being dealt with respect to the thing. So that would be consistent with what the Prime Minister said. So the Prime Minister didn't dismiss the report. He didn't say the report, that they were listening to only one side of the aisle. The Prime Minister said, and I quote, I am concerned about these things too. This is a direct quote from the Prime Minister of our country. I didn't need the UN report to tell me about some of these issues we have, and we are addressing them. You see? But I think that that particular statement kind of just went somewhere. So my point in larger form for you is this. See, let me tell you something, right? Let's be real. Like, you see how we on this radio? Like, I'm on this radio and others on this radio. Like, it will enter your head from time to time. You know, if I say this, if I speak about this, you know, people with power might do something to me. It enters your head. Do what to you? Well, you might have a this to do, an application in here. You might have a this there and a that there. And people in power might decide, well, you know, you are not helping me, so why should I help you? Except you ain't helping me do nothing. If I'm applying, if I'm using the organs of the state as a citizen of the state, then I am simply availing myself of the thing that we delegated to you to do. So, but you do these things into your head, and then you could feel that nudge of fear, intimidation. You could feel that, oh my God, you know, because I got things I got to do, and I got people I got to feed, and all that kind of stuff. And I am telling you that we all feel it from time to time, but I take my cue every single day from all the ones who went on before us and put all on the line to say, it better I stand up for this today than my children have to lay down for it tomorrow. That's reality. Better I do this today than my children have to be living in eternal fear tomorrow. Fear of who? Of the people who have to serve them. And they're not talking about Mr. Davis or Prime Minister Davis or Mr. Monroe. I'm talking about the government of the Bahamas any day, every day. And I know what governments can do. I know what governors can do when they are pissed off at you. I know personally what they can do. And I know what they can do. I know what a FNM government could do to FNMs who they feel ain't with them. I know what that's like. I know what government can do to PLPs if they feel like you ain't support or didn't do them. I know that. Don't nobody make me call no names. My mother was a PLP for years, decades. Very well known to all the powers. They used to be trapping in and out of our house. My mom, and this is when she lived in an apartment. She rented an apartment, and all of them used to be passing through. So Lyndon used to call my mommy Nomi. That's what he used to call my mommy, Nomi. And I know the story she told me of men. She always used to say to me, my mother used to say to me all the time, she said, Chicago, one thing I hate to see is when people make men bow down, beg. And my son, I have seen even from them. And at the time, she was talking about the PLP, because there was no other government then. But I know that I've seen it under the FNM. Right? You don't want to live like that. You may still have incidences, but you don't want that to prevail. So no intimidation. You can't be scared to decide, I believe this report versus the police that I have to call upon. That is not for the Bahamas. That is not for well-governed Bahamas. That is not for progressive, modern Bahamas. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabago Lang, your host. We're going to take our news break, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussions. We'll be back after the news break. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. If you want to give us a call, the numbers to do so are 323-6232. Or 325-4316 or 325-4259. And from the Family Islands, you can call us on 242-300-5720. You can text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. Or you could WhatsApp me on 439-3043. That's 439-3043. Again, while I was reading the, this is not a pick on anybody, Dave, but it just so happens that the Minister of National Security, like a couple of his items, caught my attention. The minister said that the government was committed to establishing a national youth service. You will recall that the minister says, first of all, the minister says we are committed to doing that. He says we are also going to be looking to model, not exactly on the youth guard, but a national youth service for young people who are, for want of a better word, as the English would say, at a loose end, not in school, not working, he said. This has to do with how people are raised. It's kind of difficult to change it, and it once it's set in, you have to bend the tree when it's young. He said our National Youth Development Office of the Defense Force has been asked to come up with a concept proposal for us as to how it would work, what agencies will be involved. Then, of course, you need budgetary modeling as to how you are going to do that. So a couple of things here. A national youth service the National Youth Service was first proposed by Sir Lyndon Plinlimmon in the 80s. And I have to tell you that when the government at the time under Sir Lyndon was considering the National Service, it brought a group of youth leaders together in Nassau. I remember distinctly where the meetings were held. They were held down there by the, what was it called? That building, the Pan Am building there by the Sports Center. It was on the compound, the grounds of the Sports Center. We held meetings there. We discussed this issue of a national service. And at the time, the general view of the youth leaders was this was not a good idea. I think it got bogged down in notion that people would be forced to do this, and then the question was, well, who people? And if you only had the people who went off to college didn't do it, and the people who were immediately employed do it, or something of that nature, then weren't you going to be discriminating against lower income peoples and suggest that only lower income peoples were problematic people, you know? Anyways, it was not accepted then, and so it was kind of shelved. Then Ingram came to office, and Ingram appointed a national youth consultative committee. And I was one of the youth leaders of Lyndon called upon to look at this issue. And then I was one of the people appointed to the national youth consultative task force, headed by Bishop Drexel Gomez. And the issue of a national service, youth service, came up in by that committee. And if you read the report says that the problem with the national, and you can see the problem right here in this story. The problem with something called a national youth service was that it almost only came up in the context of young people being delinquent, young people being bad. And the question for the committee was, why would national service be cast in the context of only bad young people? Wouldn't sensible, responsible young people also be people who should do national service? And therefore, is that what we want? If we want a national youth service, it should be for everybody. It shouldn't be for the so-called bad kids, because every time the national youth service came up, crime was high, young people were doing violent things, and therefore we need national youth service. That was always the context of national service, as if such a thing saved young people from anything, anywhere in the world, per se, right? But that national young people should be participating in national youth service makes perfectly good sense. But as a reaction to delinquency, the committee thought did not make sense. What the committee thought should happen was, and this is why I found it interesting, the committee thought that we should pursue for those kinds of young people national youth development, right? Acknowledging maybe some defective deficiency in their development and trying to get them on course. Let everybody do service, but have development programs for them. And it was interesting because the minister said our national youth development office. He mentioned national service, but he mentions national youth development in the context of the defense force. So the idea is always that there is a discipline that young people need, that all people need, in order to behave themselves properly. And the truth of the matter is, young people who are caught up in violent crimes or violent behavior or delinquent behavior, you can't say discipline is the only reason why they're doing what they're doing, because many people who are not involved with any such things are involved with other things where discipline, you might argue, should have been shown. Right? It's a more complex issue than that. Why young people do what they do. Why anybody does what they do. It's more complex. It's much more complex than that. And it isn't always, it's actually no one, there is even no one reason why any young person or group of young people do something. There could be multiple reasons. There could be multiple elements to a multiple reason young people do, to a single reason young people do something, or anybody does something. Right? And this was something I always argued in the context of National Youth Service. Hear me out. In the Bahamas, we have mandatory attendance in school, mandatory, up to the age of 16. Between 5 and 16, you have to go to school, right? That means for 8 hours in a day, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., that's 8 hours, or close to, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., 5 days of the week, every week, saving and except them breaks for summer and Easter and midterm, which is most of the year, for 12 solid years, your system that is funded to the tune of multiple hundreds of millions of dollars, funded with professionally trained educators, guidance counselors, senior masters and mistresses, your system that is supported by Parent Teachers Association, supported by business houses and so forth, for 12 years. And that these same people who have the benefit, we believe, of their parental guidance for 12 years. If you can't fix them with all of that, how are you going to fix them in 2 years? If you can't fix them when they are supposed to be most malleable, this is what the minister said. The minister said you got to bend that tree while it's still bendable. That's what he said. Well, when it's still bendable, it's still bendable in those early years. Well, who has them in those early years? Parents have them in those early years. Generally speaking, what child in the Bahamas in first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh grade, telling their parents what to do, and the parents can't tell them what to do? What child in the Bahamas? I mean, I know you have some instances of that, but listen, you know that, you know. For 12 years, 12 solid years, 12 solid funded years, 12 solid, significantly resourced years, more significantly than any program we could try to alienate. And if we can't get them straight then, whatever straight is for us, what is a two-year program going to do? Seriously? Mind you, a program can have an impact. I'm not suggesting it can't. But we already have, I would suggest to you, a national youth development program. It's called the Education System of the Bahamas. It's called the Education System of the Bahamas. You think the children out of the public, out of the private schools, could be the most participants in a National Youth Service Program? You think so? And if not, why not? Why not? They have education system. They got parental guidance and so forth and so forth. I think that we think about our current situation and maybe find out how we can better use it. What do you think? Even if I ask the question, should we have a national youth service? The question has to be, meaning what? What is the service exactly? What would be its programmatic content? Right? Secondly, who would be the ones going into this program? Would it be all young people? And what is the definition of young people? Is that everybody under 25? Is that everyone between 5 and 18? What would be? So you got to establish that, right? And would these be young people who have been found delinquent? The minister said, if you are not, is what the minister says. So he has some notion about who, he says that. He says police reported that the police, he said, Monroe said the people doing the killing in the country are between 15 and 25. So might that be the target audience for such a program? And then he indicated that the program is, he says, we are also going to be looking to model, not exactly on the youth guard, but a national youth service for young people who are, for want of a better word, as the English would say, at loose end. You're not in school and you're not working. You're not in school and you're not working. So if you are unemployed and you are not engaged in the pursuit of education, you might be eligible for this. Now, mind you, let me tell you something. I think the minister's onto something for that. I think he is. I think he's onto something. Because if you are not working and you are not engaged in any educational pursuit, or you are not volunteering yourself somewhere, right? What is the reasonable expectation as to what you are doing with your waking time? Presuming that you don't sleep, presuming you sleep 8 hours a day out of a 24-hour day, what are you doing with 16 hours? If you're not working, you're not schooling, you are not volunteering anywhere, what are you doing with 16? I want you all, please tell me, what would a person who is between 15 and 25 years of age be doing for 16 hours out of a day, who is not working, not schooling, not volunteering someplace? What would such a person be doing? What do you think? Call me, text me, 323-6232, 325-4316 or 325-4259. Text me, 422-4796 or WhatsApp me on 439-3043. You tell me, what would such a person be doing? Now, I could tell you what I was doing between 1989 and 1991. I was busy looking for a job because I wasn't working and I wasn't schooling, but I had finished university and I wasn't working. I couldn't find a job, but I was busy looking for a job. But then again, I was volunteering at the church, Calvary Temple too. I was helping them get the new church up and running. But I want you to, but somebody says they'd be hanging out on the block, on the blocks. Could be. I mean, think about it though. What would such a person be doing? And how likely is it that such a young person, now bear in mind, it's not, do ladies hang out on the blocks too? This is young men and young women, you know. What could you do with 16 hours? Is it likely that a person with 16 hours of no work, no schooling, no volunteering, is it likely that their minds start to wonder their susceptibility to participation in delinquent? Like, what is a person? I don't have money unless mommy and daddy taking care of me. I don't have my own money to do what I want to do. What is a person like that doing? Some of y'all guys, I know y'all listening to this show now. Y'all talk to me. Tell me what is such a young person doing? Is the minister not on to something? Yeah, 15, 25-year-olds. No job. No schooling. This text says being susceptible to deviant behavior. Might that not be so? What do we know about the folks who have tended to become before the courts, get convicted of crimes? Are they mostly unemployed, not schooling, not volunteering, young males between 15 and 25? The minister says that the police advises that most of the murders in the country are being committed by that age group, and that the victims of such murders are mostly between 18 and 24. That's what the minister advises. So is it useful? Is it helpful that if you are not working, not schooling, not presently engaged in some volunteer program, that you should be, the state should force you to be doing something, whatever it decides to call it? Talk to me. You say, well, you know, nobody's asked us anything. Well, I'm asking. What if we should just son, ma'am, sir, said your daughter, ma'am, sir, should your child over whom you have guardianship, should they not waken, not schooling, not volunteering in some structured manner, should they be forced to go to a program? And don't pay you. They don't pay you for the program. They say, you go do the service. They might give a stipend. They don't pay you. Say, hey, Shivago, they are probably looking for a way to make money through some type of illegal or nefarious hustle. Well, let's put it like this. Might they be looking to make some money? And if there isn't a legitimate way to do it, they might be minded to look at an illegitimate way to do it. I don't think most young people, or even the ones who get in issues, have decided I want to go and get into trouble. You know, I think that in the options that they see, most of those options might be, bro, this is the easiest thing. Take this to a drug, rob this one, or something. You know, I think that might be what happened. I don't think that they are intent on desirous of being bad. That's not been my experience. I've been a youth director, a youth worker between 1990 and 1990. No, longer than that. Anyway, for years, I was involved with youth work. And I young people didn't, even the ones who got in issues, didn't seem to me like this was their ambition. Stack says, yes, but we need not make the program appear punitive, but position it in a positive light and also give a stipend. Mm. Okay? I agree. You don't want the young person see you punishing me. But the reality is you ain't waking. You're not schooling. You're not presently involved with any volunteer, structured volunteer, something. So I'm asking you all, some of you, tell me, man, I want to hear from you. Because some of you all, I mean, your lips tight now. If it was your child, forget, see, it's easy to think about other people's children being in the program. That's easy. What if it was your child? Now, so for instance, if it was your child who was not working and not schooling, but was looking for work and couldn't find work, should that child be made to go to such a service? Quiet. So most of them have the belief that they should be earning more than entry-level wage jobs, as that is seen as a waste of time. That is true. a lot. I know that that is an issue. You know, I came out of the University of Western Ontario with a Bachelor of Arts degree in economics in 1989. I graduated in 1990 out of that program. So I finished in 89, but the graduation ceremony wasn't until the following year. And I looked for work everywhere I could think. The first job I took, with a bachelor's degree in economics, was bookkeeping for an elderly Englishman, and he paid me $125 a week. $125. My peers who had found work were making $300-$400. When I worked as a summer student at Syntex, I was making $250 a week. Now, as a summer student, I was making $125 a week. I agree with the texter. There are many young people you couldn't, what? Make minimum wage? I could hustle that in a day, Dre. Just like that. Say, but they have no job skills, but want to be paid just because. Yep. But they're on the blocks, somebody say. You're listening to Z Live, I'm Shivago Lang, your host. I can't even hear from you, old man. It's okay for your children to go? Or only for other people's children? Nobody. I have for two people. You're listening to Z Live, I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break. Through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you make it down the same road.
Get ready to jingle all the way to Christmas with Fidelity's Festive Giveaway, with over $10,000 in cash and prizes up for grabs. Apply for a loan or open an ASU savings account for a chance to win big. Visit any of our branches for more details. Terms and conditions apply.
The Grand Bahama News is available every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian. You can buy your local paper at Freeport convenience stores, Western Bakery, DeGregory's Fine Foods, and Bellevue Gifts. Now is the time to reach your Grand Bahama market with affordable packages, including print and digital. Call GB News sales representative Kavandre at 822-6717 or message him on WhatsApp for ad rates. Classified ads are now available every Tuesday as well. Keep up with everything Grand Bahamian every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian.
This is Dwight Strawn with Morning Blend. On behalf of the crew and my co-hosts, I wish you all a very Merry Christmas and an incredibly blessed and prosperous New Year.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. If you want to call us, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can call us from the Family Islands on 242-300-5720. You can text us on 422-4796 or WhatsApp me on 439-3043. This text, they out shopping, spending what they don't have, i.e. your listeners. That's true. Okay, I think I can. Dwight, why don't we call it a yeah, man? Let these people go shop. Let them, these people, and go shop, go buy up turkey and ham and and lights and stuff. I see babies in the stores now. I see y'all. I see y'all. I've been there myself a couple times. I could tell you this much. Depending on the content of the program that the government has, I would send my child. I would send my son, my daughter, depending on the program. Because if the content is beneficial, whether in terms of what they could learn or in terms of what they could give, I would send them to do that. If they're not working, if they're not schooling, if they're not in some other structured program, I would. I would definitely do it. And I believe in that. I believe that you could only benefit from things that are positively impacting upon you, right? And so, and if you're idle, that's not a good thing. Now, a disciplined young person, a young person that's well guided, could be not working and not schooling, and could make a fulsome day of their lives. Could. There are all kinds of things that are young, such a young person. Like, because nobody has to put you on a learning, on a training program. You can put yourself. Nobody has to put you on a business path. You can put yourself. You could decide on, okay, you know what? I'm gonna try these couple of products and I'm gonna push them. I'm gonna go sell those products. That's your little business, right? So you could do that yourself. You can put yourself on a volunteer program in which you are participating, right? Say not till after Friday. Well, you're a hard task master now. So you could put yourself in a program. I'm telling you, I did not find work for about a year and a half after I finished university. 1 year and a half. What did I do? Well, I did spend time with my friends. I did. They were working, so I had to spend time with them afterward. In the middle of the day, you know, I spent a lot of time home searching for jobs, reading through material, writing. Sometimes I wrote to the editor, letter to the editor about things that concerned me in the society. I went to places where I knew business people hung out, you know, some of the restaurants at lunchtime, because I thought I'd run into a couple of them who I sent application forms to. I volunteered at the church that I was participating in. I got involved with the youth program and helped in that way. And so I lived a full life, you know, but I wanted to work. I wanted to earn money for myself, you know. And so you could have a full, so just because somebody isn't working or not schooling doesn't mean they can't have a full productive life. But if you, many young people cannot organize their lives that way. They can't, they just don't see it. And without guidance, they don't see it. So maybe a program that structures their lives then that way can be helpful. Let me also say, like, seriously do it. Seriously. Most of our young people are not susceptible to bad, negative repression. They're not going to go there, still dealing drugs, selling drugs, like gang banging, etc. That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen for most of them, right? They'd be hanging right around home or hanging around with their friends, their so-called good friends. They're not going to go. But there are some of our young people, and some who may not be obvious to you, because from all appearances, they are fairly good, sensible kids, but they can be susceptible because you never know what triggers a person, right? So you have to be careful of parents. When your children graduate high school and college, don't take your eyes off them. Do not do it. Do not do it. As a matter of fact, be very observant. Watch their mood. I'm not saying they harass them. I'm saying watch their mood. Listen to their language. Watch their movements. Look at the people they're connecting to and hanging out with. Listen to their complaints, their criticisms. Watch how they respond to the things you say to them. Because in that can be messages about things that's going on internally with them. This nonsense that young people don't have stress and young people don't go through stuff, that's nonsense. Some of them go through some deep, serious consideration. Sometimes you could have your daughter going through some stuff and she don't know how, she don't feel comfortable to come and say it. It could be anything. She could be being put down by her peers. She could be going through stuff with a boyfriend. She could be being molested. You don't know. And she don't say, but some signs could be there. Sometimes you're a young guy, he's going through some stuff. He could be battling with sexuality issues of himself. He could be engaged in sexual activity and get somebody pregnant and don't want to tell you, don't know how to tell you, and don't know how to deal with it. He could be being pressured by some of these boys them to run the road and do some things, and he don't really want to, but the pressure is great, but he don't know how to say so. So, you parents, you got to watch it. And you all men, hey, don't get mad with daddy, with me. Listen, man, you all got to show up, be there. Keep, even if you and the woman ain't together no more, you got to be in that child's life, listening, observing, spending time, connecting, trying to figure it out. Well, you'd be surprised to know what you could find out about your children. Not from them, you know, but people who know that you care and in their life and who desire to tell you because they want you to be aware. So plenty of children can organize their lives around for productive, sensible stuff. So if you could find something for them, you know, help them out. As text says, the day working and living in Ghana National Service, not youth, was done by all. Even when you finished college, you have to do a year. And on being hired by any company, you would have to prove you completed. I don't think it should be coming from the Minister of National Security because it make sounds like military service. Yep. Says, and it was working on jobs as an apprentice, learning trades. Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. This text says, me too. Very important to screen the directors of the program, though. Properly vet them. Peer pressures. Yeah. This text says, Mr. Lang, when I finished college in 81 with a bachelor's degree in sociology, I made $125 a week. My mother convinced me to take that job and gave me lunch money. I was so disappointed in the salary. It took me 35 years to earn $1,000 a week. It's not what you make, it's what you do with it. I presently own a home and okay with the salary, but if I was working for the private sector, I'm sure I'd be earning much more. Yeah, you know, I for years I've said to young people, you know, you take the job you could get until you could get the job you want. Bottom line, right? Better to be earning something than nothing. And every place you go becomes another stepping stone, another place for growing. Yep, as somebody said, get your foot in the door. So, you know, young people could do it on their own with guidance if they cared to, but sometimes you need help. You need help. It says, and demonstrate your skills. Yeah, that's what I tell them, boy. Listen, go there and shine. Shine for the people. Show them why they should pay you. I tell people the way I do it is, I say, you know, you cannot stop people from firing you. But you should try to make it hard for them to do so. Right? Why? Because they say, you know what, boy, this is a pretty valuable person. And I got to let them go, but boy, it is hurting to do so. But if people letting you go and anything, they don't think about it, you need to up your game. I would need to up my game because our aim is to be valuable. I asked my daughter, I said, tell me something that I taught you. And she said, you taught me that wherever you go, make sure that you display your value so that people understand how important it is to have you there. So you got that right. So Mr. Lang, I had to step away from the radio. Do you plan to speak on projections for the 2024 economy? If all goes well, I have a very special guest who will be talking to us with us about that same thing. But yeah, but I won't be doing it today, but we definitely are going to be having that discussion before the year ends. Okay. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take our final break. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shafar Gulang, your host. We'll be back after this break. I'm not afraid to take a stand.
Wherever you are in the world, Cleveland Clinic's world-class care is here for you. From Ohio to Florida to London, Cleveland Clinic treats thousands of patients every year, ranked number 2 in the world by Newsweek. You can trust our caregivers to enhance your experience across each step of your treatment journey. For every care in the world, learn more at clevelandclinic.org/Caribbean.
Secure your financial future with RF Bank and Trust. Explore the RF Secured Balance Fund, designed for long-term financial security. This diversified fund offers both growth potential and a steady income source. Plan for the long term with a recommended minimum investment of 5 years. With over 2 decades of experience, RF Bank and Trust is your expert in preserving and growing wealth. We're your local private bank, connecting you with the best local and international investment opportunities. Don't miss the chance to secure your financial future with RF Bank and Trust.
Beulah Gal, can you believe this? We are now the patrol queens of the neighborhood.
We now large and in charge. So we need to check out what's going on in everybody's yard. What about that gun that we know that Junior and his homeboys just ran out? Can we report that too?
Of course we can.
But we could be in deep trouble if they find out.
We need to report what we see, Beulah. When you call Crime Stoppers, they just answer your call in Miami.
So then we can report everything? Guns, where they hiding the drugs, who shoot who part of which gang, or who disturbing the peace with a loud music and the motorcycles.
Then our neighborhood will be the best in the Bahamas, and everybody gonna want to come live here. And then our house price will go up, gal.
So what we waiting on? What's the number?
If you see something, say something. Let us all pitch in and stop the crime before it's your time. Call 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands, or text us through the Crack Crime Bahamas app. Stop the crime before it's your time.
Happy holidays from Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. Have a beautiful and wonderful Christmas.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shafar Gulang, your host. I'm so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. If you want to call us in these last remaining moments of the show, you can call us on 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can, from the Family Islands, call us on 242-300-5720. You can text us on 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. This text says, great discussion. Thank you very much. Let me tell you all, one of the things that I'm going to make it a point to do next year more is to try to provide some more personal development discussions so that all of us we can grow together and go together and achieve together some things, because it's possible. There are many things that we can do, but the real challenge. The real challenge is to get out of our own way. We are oftentimes in our own way, man. It's the truth. Our attitudes, our thinking, our habits, you know, and even when our intentions are good, we're trying to do better. We're trying to do better in terms of our eating. We're trying to do better in terms of our exercising. We're trying to do better in terms of our spirituality. We're trying to do better in terms of our morality. We're trying to do better in terms of our relationships. Even when we have good intentions, we find ourselves messing up. We find ourselves falling off, and so forth and so forth. But there is an approach to all of this that can help us get there, because sometimes you got to understand that it's progression, not perfection, that you want to work with, you know, but we want to help each other get there. So next year, my hope is to be able to have us spend some more time on some of those things. I can tell you the abundance of my life is a journey toward better man, a journey toward identifying where I am weak, where I am deficient, and trying to fix them, correct them. A journey toward understanding where I am strong and using them to my aid and to the aid of others and so forth and so forth. So I don't spend time just thinking about what's wrong with me only. I don't do that. I'm not one of them people. I'm sorry. You can criticize me till thy kingdom come, and it stinks. I tell you, it stinks. You criticize me, I can feel it. But I ain't getting that much time of the day. I ain't gonna lie to you, buddy. I might spend some time talking through that with somebody because I try to get a little feedback and so forth. But after that, I'm done. Right? So it's a journey. And anybody who makes it seem so, it's not a simple, it's not a easy journey. And imagine if those of us who are adults, who have spent some time trying to develop ourselves and discipline ourselves, if we struggle, what do you think is happening to these young people? Right? But we can get there. We can make progress with the right guidance, the right tools, with the right support. You know, we can get there. And that's one of the things I hope we can do next year. We can talk about what's happening in the country, the politics, the economics, and so forth and so forth. We can talk about that. But I mean, that's not the totality of life. Man, listen to me. You know what I get? What do you think? What question do you think I get asked the most when people see me? Anybody? Venture a guess. What do you think? What do you think people ask me the most? You know what they ask me the most? You coming back to politics? That's what I get. You coming back to politics? The politics? Why? Because that's how people fashion you. That's how they fashion. Like that's your mold. That's for them. That's your mold. That's what you did. Somebody just texted, when do you return to politics? That's right. I get asked practically every day. Right? But see, and that's the mold people put you in, and that's happens if you're a teacher, people put you in that mold. If you're a preacher, they put you in that mold, and so forth. But we are all so much more. We are all so much more, right? You should never be defined. You should never be defined by the job you hold. Even your career should not define you, right? And you should never be defined by other people, right? Other people shouldn't define you, because people love to do that. And sometimes that works out for us in ways, and sometimes, many times, it does not, right? You shouldn't do that. How should you be defined? How should I be defined? We should be defined by the values, the principles, and the purposes we define for ourselves. That's how we should be defined. You connect up to your God. You determine the values, the principles, and the purposes for your life. And that's your definition of yourself. It comes from within. That way, nothing outside of you moves you and molds you and makes you into the person that you believe you should be. Those things can influence you. But at the end of the day, if you how high you are depends on how good people talk about you. And how low you are depends on about how bad people talk about you. All right? They all up in your business. They know what you have, don't have, what you had, didn't get. And you think that's something? That's because your whole person is being shaped by, defined by other people's point of view. You don't want to live like that, and I don't want to live like that, right? So I understand people's query about me and politics, but I tell them, listen, buddy, I am not about that today. That's it. Oh, what you? I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow in the future. I know it ain't happening next election. You can be sure of that. I know that, right? But that's not me. I don't have to be defined by that. Right? And you and I, we need to know that we are so much more. And we should strive to be that more. Not more as in, there's no more of you. There's no more of you. There's no more of you to be. There's no more of you. Okay, let's be clear about that. There's no more of you to be. You are the fullest you will be. Growth physically and growth in terms of maturity. That's just process, right? That's just process. But there's no more of you to be. When I say you are more, I'm saying you are so much more than the definitions people have put on you. And it doesn't matter your age. Some of y'all women think because you ain't a certain age, like it ain't no thing no more. Some of you men, like nonsense. Nonsense. Some people think, oh, because I physically can't do this no more, I physically can't do that more. Nonsense. Right? You are in whatever capacity you are, you can use yourself to the fullest to do whatever is in line with your values, your principles, and the purposes you set for yourself. That's it. Nobody pressure you. Nobody put no pressure on you. You should be doing this and you should be doing that. Assess who? And who is you? You are like me. You need some instructions from God. That's not me. Why are you trying to give me instruction? Me and you, all of us in the struggle, bro. Sis, we all in the struggle. Let's get there together. Don't try to define me. And we should help young people develop that same attitude. That's how they resist some of these pressures. Because they're hanging out with people who try and but you want boy, but you I should be this and I should be that boy. You Negroes don't need to know who you ain't. Listen, man, you is a struggler like me. All right. That's why you call my peer. A peer means an equal. You and me are equal. Why should I be listening to you more than you listening to me? Right? You and I are sharing the same ignorant pot. A need of learning and the need of wisdom, need of knowledge and understanding. So let's have a discussion together. Stop telling me what I should be doing, who I should be, who I should be with, who I shouldn't be with. That's not your place. Be my friend if you want to be my friend. Let's talk. Let's discuss. Let's dream together. But don't try to tell me what I should be and who I should be. Parents, don't tell your children who they should be. Don't tell them. Guide them to their potentiality. Guide them to the discovery of their own selves. And watch them thrive. Is Texas so what is your answer? All right. So you should be defined by the gifts and talents given you by God. How well you use them. I with you. All right, ladies and gentlemen, listen, so glad that y'all could join us today. God bless you. Stay tuned. If he spares life, we'll talk to you again tomorrow. Boss man, Dwight say, no, we can't go nowhere till after Friday. So y'all take care. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. You've been listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. Good afternoon. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid.